Kev up today has made decisions on extensions to deployments in the Sinai, the multinational force, and to the Solomon Islands, and Phil Goff will be issuing a statement about that. We've also reached agreement on upgrading New Zealand's science relationship with the European Union. There's a new agreement which will be signed this year. It's under Pete Hodgson's area of responsibility. We've agreed to develop new rules to promote motorcycle safety, and the Transport Ministers will be releasing details around those. We've approved guidelines for government agencies which administer infringement schemes. You'll recall there was a big consultation about that a little while ago, and decisions have now been reached around guidelines. Rick Barker will be have something to say about that as Courts Minister. The major Māori education strategy has been finalised. It is to be released next month, as are the revised State Services Equal Employment Opportunities Policy Guidelines, with April launch scheduled there. We're making good progress on the project to improve the efficiency of the consent process, building consent process for the starter homes. And the options are becoming clear, so Shane Jones is likely to be releasing information about the work being done on that. And we also have the Department of Building and Housing looking at options which would promote stable tenancies in light of the higher proportion of people who are renting rather than owning these days. We've had our weekly update on the drought. In summary, the situation is better overall in the South Island, although there are areas of concern in eastern Marlborough and the Mackenzie country. But the drought-affected areas of the North Island have had very little relief, so the situation has become more difficult there. Coming up this week in the House, it's a government week of business through to Easter. For tomorrow, there's the financial review debate scheduled. That's a four-hour debate. And then we move on to legislation. We have the Anne Dalziel's Securities Local Authority Exemption Amendment Bill, very popular with local authorities, which we hope to take through to committee stages this week. We have the Social Assistance Debt Prevention and Minimisation Amendment, hopefully to third reading this week. The Human Tissue Bill, committee stage continues. The Copyright New Technologies and Performance Rights Amendment Bill, Judith Tizard is Associate Congress looking after that. That should complete its second reading. Second reading of the Electricity Disconnection and Low Fixed Charges Amendment Bill in David Parker's name should also occur. And we do have a first reading of the Commerce Amendment Bill as well, and a second reading of the Biosecurity and Hazardous Substances and New Organisms Amendment Bill that's dealing with the issue thrown up in the court case over honey recently. At 5:30 on Wednesday, Diane Yates will be making her valedictory statement to the House, and it is planned that she will resign effective as of 31 March, and the new MP, Sir William Sear, will be sworn in on April 1st. Otherwise, coming up this week, we have the Law Commission announcing information about the review the government's asked it to undertake on the Misuse of Drugs Act. We'll be talking about that. We have an event on Race Relations Day tomorrow. A report due, I understand, from the Auditor General around mental health facilities and services in prisons. Also possible before Easter is the police report into the search and rescue of Wanganui, where a teenage fisherman died, and some debate about that. At Easter, Jim Anderson is off to India with a significant trade mission. And there will be a statement in the course of Easter around improved work conditions, and that will coincide with the centennial celebration of the Blackball Strike on the East Coast. On the subject of Tibet, which has been very much in the headlines today, I want to say that the New Zealand government is deeply concerned at the violence in Tibet. We want to see an end to the violence. We have long urged Chinese authorities to enter into a meaningful dialogue with representatives of the people of Tibet, as we think that is the best way of achieving a lasting resolution of problems in Tibet. In New Zealand, we do respect the right of people to protest peacefully, and we urge the Chinese authorities to react carefully and proportionately to protest. We are conveying the New Zealand government's views to the Chinese authorities through official channels. We have regular discussions with China on human rights issues. They are always raised at my level, at ministerial level, and through official dialogue. We take an ongoing interest in developments in Tibet, and we will be continuing to convey our views about that specific issue. And with respect to Kiwis in Tibet, we have urged them to register, if they have not already, with the Ministry of Foreign Affairs and Trade, and to update their contact details with us so that we know where they are should the situation change. Any questions?
Does the violence in Tibet lessen your appetite in any way to sign a free trade deal with China?
Free trade agreement with China, if successfully completed, will stand on its own merits. I've said many times that if New Zealand only traded and only entered into trade agreements with countries with which it had identical interests and views, then apart from Ireland and Switzerland and Scandinavia, it would be pretty thin pickings. The reality is New Zealand has different views with most countries on some issues. With China, it happens to be human rights. But that is not standing in the way of New Zealand having a broad-based relationship with China, and that includes a dialogue on human rights issues and the ability to say where we have a concern, where there is violence.
So is there no level of human rights abuses that would preclude us from a free trade agreement?
We look at the overall relationship with the country. There's a very large relationship with China, very large relationship with the United States, but obviously we haven't agreed with the United States on everything, or with France, or with the United Kingdom, or with India, or with many, many countries. So we look at the overall balance of interests. That does not stop us making our views known on issues like violence and human rights.
You talked in the past about including labour standards and environmental standards in free trade agreements. Have you been successful in this case?
We're not ready to reveal details of what we're waiting, obviously, with anticipation to announce, but I can assure you that negotiations on labour and environment matters have been fruitful.
Are you going to convey your concern just through the press statement, or will you ask officials in Beijing to talk to Chinese officials?
The Ambassador, Tony Brown, has been asked to go to the Foreign Ministry with New Zealand's views.
You say to Keith Locke, he says that you're not being tough enough in the condemnation of the actions of the past 24 hours.
Keith Locke comes from a completely different perspective. Keith Locke supports an uprising in Tibet. It has never been any New Zealand government's position that Tibet should be independent. So we start from a completely different point of view.
We've asked voters in our poll whether they think the deal should go ahead, and more Kiwis don't want to go ahead than
I think that when the full details come out, people will be able to see for themselves what the benefits are. We cannot be as successful as we would like to be in the Chinese market while we face discriminatory tariffs. That hurts us. On the other hand, China's goods come into New Zealand with virtually no impediment at all. So if there's an impression being given in questions that somehow the free trade agreement opens New Zealand up to vastly more Chinese goods on highly favourable terms, the reality is those goods can come in virtually unhindered now. My own view is that in a straight two-way trade perspective, the advantage is for New Zealand, but both countries have seen the strategic advantage of entering the FTA.
Isn't that part of the point? You're saying people don't have the details, but they won't have the details before you've signed it.
But of course, signing is one of many steps along the way. There is then the treaty examination process in the select committee. There's a 20-day sitting day period for that to happen. And then there must be legislation passed in the New Zealand Parliament. It can't get more democratic than that.
What changed today? Because this is obviously a lot firmer than what you said this morning, and you said you were seeking more information. So what did you find out during the course of the day?
Well, you know, basically I don't spend every weekend glued to the television set. As of last night, when we were being pressed for comment, we said we were seeking more information, we said we were concerned, we called on both sides to refrain from violence. In the course of today, we have been getting more information in from various sources, and so one is in a position to comment more fully. With respect to what initiated what happened, whether we will ever know is a fair question to ask. We do not know whether the protest started out peaceful and went violent. We do not know whether it started out violent and was then met with disproportionate violence. What we are expressing is a deep concern about the violence and calling on both sides to act with restraint.
It's part of the problem about the fact that we don't know those details because China doesn't have freedom.
Of course. China is a dictatorship. I've said that in words of one syllable here before.
So are you saying you don't know at this stage whether China is reacting carefully and proportionately?
We don't know whether this started out peaceful and was met with a disproportionate response and then got worse on both sides. We don't know whether it started out as a riot, and obviously authorities try to control riots, but then controlling riots also involves a degree of proportion. There's a lot we don't know about it. And I made the point this morning, it is silly to rush in and condemn when you do not have the full picture.
Mr. Tyrone has virtually told the Chinese to exercise restraint. Do you think your message is the same as his?
Absolutely.
Is the timing of this politically difficult for you? I mean, particularly if in a couple of weeks you go to Beijing to sign a free trade deal and there's still ongoing violence in Tibet, would that be difficult?
Well, obviously it makes it more pressing that the issue is raised, but it does not have an effect on any signing which might be planned for April.
Do you think the fact that 110 people are reported, Tibetans now reported dead, suggests that the Chinese are being careful and they're proportionate in their response?
So, look, I don't have any verification. Any violence is of concern to New Zealand. I expressed that concern last night. I've put them right in today. I've told you that the New Zealand ambassador is going in to express New Zealand's concern. Whether we will ever know the full truth of what has happened is another matter.
Are you embarrassed to lead a government that owns an airline that pays its Chinese cabin crew less than the minimum wage?
Well, I'm aware that Air New Zealand employs people in a range of locations around the world, and that includes flight crews. For example, if you asked, are the London-based crews paid the same or better than those based in New Zealand, I would guess the answer is almost certain yes, because the market rates are higher in London. Apply the same logic, the market rates will be lower in Shanghai. Now, my understanding is that airlines who base crews in Shanghai, local crews, do not directly employ them, they employ them through a local government agency. And they also pay substantial taxes to the Chinese government over and above the wages that are paid to the Chinese workers. I would imagine that Air New Zealand is paying the going rate in China. It has, I believe, a very low level of attrition of staff there, which suggests that probably the rate is fair in comparison to others. If you're asking me, would I expect a market rate in Shanghai to be the same as New Zealand's? No, I would. No more than I would expect the London rate to be.
Doesn't that sound like the sort of labour rights that we press for in pre-trade agreements?
No, because we've never argued that arguing for labour rights means that people in developing countries will enjoy exactly the same wages today as our own workers do.
Effectively, though, these people are standing on airliners serving people with the New Zealand uniform on. So the people on the plane, they are ambassadors for New Zealand. I mean, is it a good look to be paying them such a pittance?
Well, is it a good look to be paying London-based crews of largely British people more than New Zealanders who are doing the run-up to Los Angeles and back? I mean, in the end, the New Zealand has to make judgments about what constitutes the New Zealand experience on the planes. But certainly it does source crews from elsewhere. Sometimes they will be paid more, as I would suggest is the case with London. Sometimes the market rate will be less, as is undoubtedly the case in Shanghai.
Isn't this the race to the bottom that critics of free trade always been worried about?
No.
That labour and wages flow to the cheapest country?
Well, obviously they don't. We have, in New Zealand, overwhelmingly employing New Zealand-based crews. But in a couple of places, at least, it doesn't.
The TVNZ poll last night showed a small but noticeable rise in Labour support and in your own support. Do you think that was just margin of error stuff, or do you think perhaps that could be a something of a new trend development?
It was a little more than a margin of error, and probably with respect to where we are at the moment, to brought it more into line with some of the other points.
What do you put it down to? Do you think that people have had another look at John Key and are perhaps less convinced given some of his recent stumbles on policy?
As I said here 2 weeks ago, there comes a point when you move out of the phony war and people have to start putting their cards on the table. And if they aren't playing that card, and I'm in an arum about the absence of that card, that becomes pretty obvious.
What do you think of Roger Douglas's return?
Trip down memory lane. And the memories aren't that edifying. Having said that, I wouldn't be at all surprised if ACT feels encouraged by the opportunities for it at the moment. Because whether or not you agree with what ACT stands for and believes, and I certainly don't, at least they stand for or believe in something, which the National Party appears not to at the moment, except for power.
You have had any
sort of
reports on the report from the
Director
General
into
today?
Well, as you can imagine, I haven't had time to read it because it only arrived on my desk this afternoon at the Cabinet. But for the record, what I've been advised is that the Board had inadequate systems for management of conflict of interest, that Board members often participated in board discussions when they had conflicts of interest, that the board lacked any proper governance manual which could have given members guidance on how to handle conflicts of interest, that it had minimal induction and training processes on these and other governance issues for new board members, and that there was a seriously eroded and dysfunctional relationship between the board and management. That's the headlines of what I've been advised, and on the basis of that and the report which lies behind it, I think the Minister made the right decision.
So all the board members have told me what it sounds
like? I would say so.
An Electoral Commission survey out showed that one third of voters would prefer to vote online. Could you see that happening later this year in the election? Online voting?
In short, later this year, I don't think so. Because to get such a system tested and up and running is a major ICT exercise, but for the future, no doubt there will be electronic voting. But whether New Zealand won't be the first to try and design it with all the software problems that involves is another matter.
Well, least one bank, the BNZ, has forecast the economy moving into recession over the next couple of quarters. Has Cabinet discussed it, and do you think there's any policy response required?
We're obviously following the international situation closely, which is what is driving a lot of speculation about economies in general. But basically, New Zealand economy has held up pretty well. We do have the drought to factor in this year and the extent to which that impacts on production. But then with dairy prices being so high, that acts as some offset in the dairy sector at least. So, no, we're not planning a policy response to one front page in the Dominion Post, but we're obviously watching carefully for the flow-on effects from what's happening in the United States. I have seen on the Treasury's weekly bulletin, which is public information, that they are suggesting that the very strong growth in emerging markets like China will help hold up commodity prices. And that's something that economies like ours, Australian, others, didn't have going for years ago. So the conventional wisdom that when the US catches cold, we all catch a bad cold, is now under serious challenge. Other forces driving world economy.
That's considerably more sanguine an approach than the perfect storm that BNZ is talking about.
True.
Are you counting on, though, two company tax rate cuts beginning of next month? I mean, obviously, personal tax cuts announced in the budget as sort of helping buffer against any...
Well, but both could obviously be timely in these circumstances. And certainly, the reason for moving on the business tax package was precisely to stimulate business investment and growth. So one would hope to see some beneficial impact.